Welcome to Inspiration at Work, where you will hear from business leaders from around the world on what they are doing at work and through work to make the world a better place. This is the most positive talk radio show on the planet, where we have evicted the tenets of cynicism and criticism and set up residence on Inspiration Boulevard, right in the heart of Atlanta, Georgia. And now, your host, America's Chief Inspiration Officer, Terry Barber.
And welcome back to Inspiration at Work. We have quite a lineup today, and I want to also say hello and welcome to my co-host, Tamara O'Neill. Hi, Tamara.
Hi, how are you?
So good to have you here in the studio with us, and we're looking forward to your segment when we interview you, but for the time being, you get to be part of the interviewing side with an incredible special guest, Mr. Ken Blanchard. And I've got to set this up in such a way so that I don't eat up all of our time with all that could be said about Ken Blanchard. But Ken, I have to say, is it really true? I got to ask, is it really true you have more than 18 million books in print?
That's what they say. Yeah, I think it is. It's I've written about 50. And my mother used to say to me, why don't you write a book by yourself? And I would laugh, and I'd say, Mom, I already know what I know. And so on my 70th birthday last year, I invited all my co-authors, and over 50 showed up. And it was just a kick for a day and a half, kind of sharing some of the simple truths that we've been trying to share with people over the years. So it's really been fun.
What an amazing story in and of itself. And these books have been translated in over 12 languages. You've got clients in six continents. So anyway, you have really created what is surely to be an incredible legacy for years and years to come. So for that, I just say my hat is off, and I am just thrilled to be able to make your acquaintance and be a part of sharing your life here.
It's nice to be with you, Terry. You know, you say you're the chief inspirational officer. My title in our company, our training company, is I'm the chief spiritual officer, so we have a lot in common.
Hey, we could be officer cousins.
That's right.
Well, what a nice thing. Hey, I have to tell you that I have so much enjoyed reading through your latest book with Colleen Barrett on Lead with Love, all about the Southwest Airlines story. And it was interesting because when I first picked it up, I thought, well, I would just spend a little bit of time with it over the next few days and take it in. I actually took it on my spin cycle, sat there on my Kindle, and literally sat there and read through it in an hour and 50 minutes spinning. And I had a blast reading this
thing.
Well,
isn't that great? Well, it's kind of unusual, as you could say, because it's a conversation between Colleen and I. But she's practiced so much, and the folks at Southwest, about what I've been preaching over years. I've been trying to look for good news stories, and they're certainly one of those.
Well, that's for sure. You know, it was really interesting. I probably learned an awful lot about just how you think and what you think based upon the kinds of questions that you would ask in the book even. And but one of the things I thought was so insightful is that you were able to actually boil down all that you think of as important down to a simple principle. And so I'd love to start our conversation today off just getting you to share, if you couldn't take anything else with you beyond today in terms of what to teach, what would that be?
Well, I think the biggest thing, Terry, is the whole concept that Spencer Johnson and I talked about in the 1 Minute Manager is that if you want to develop people and create a great organization, you ought to wander around and catch people doing things right and accent the positive. And I think that's one of the reasons Colleen and I were soulmates. You know, about 100,000 letters came out of her office every year to the 35,000 employees in Southwest, and she handwrote, you know, 2,500 congratulating them on their anniversary, a kid's graduation from high school, all kinds of things. And so I just think that makes such a difference that people are getting cheered on, because the normal style is what I call seagull management. You know, people disappear after you set goals, and then they don't come around until a mistake is made, and then they fly in, make a lot of noise, dump on everybody, and fly out. And that's not a really fun way to be in an organization. So one of the things I do as chief spiritual officer is I leave a morning message every day, and I do three things. One, I tell people who to pray for. We have tremendous support system for people who are hurting and about something or loved one, even a pet. Then I catch people doing things right and cheer them on, and then I leave kind of an inspirational message based on something that I've read or seen recently.
Wow, what an amazing way to be able to start today. I bet the inspiration factor in your office is pretty high.
Well, I think so, in terms of, you know, just kind of reminding us constantly, you know, about why we're doing the things that we do, and I think it's important to cheer people on.
Great principle. Well, I'm going to personally take that away as a goal for myself on a daily, ongoing basis. That's for sure.
I'll just give you a quick message that I'm going to put on to today. I got an email from Gary Ridge, the president of WD-40, and he and I wrote a book called Help People Win at Work, which was another case study of companies doing good things, a business philosophy called Don't Mark My Paper, Help Me Get an A. And he said, good day. He's from Australia. He said, I often share your quote, life is a very special occasion. Don't miss it. I often share Margie, my wife's quote, you only keep what you give away. And I wanted to share with you both, today you do not need to keep anything for a special occasion because every day is a special occasion. And I said, whoa, that's really a great thing. So kind of combining a couple of things that Margie and I have said.
I love that. I think that's going to ring true in the ears of our listeners for days and days to come. Hey, you mentioned something just a minute ago about seagull managers. I noticed you use a lot of metaphors throughout this book and your other writings, but you also talk about some other bird types in the book. Would you mind talking about that for a minute? I just got the biggest kick out of this.
Yes. Well, Terry, I think it's so important when you're teaching and trying to share that you create stories, things that are memorable for people, you know, so you're not dry and everything. And so I try to use a lot of symbolism and all, and that you can tell the difference between an organization run by a servant leader versus a self-serving leader by how you're interacted with as a customer if you have a problem. If it's a self-serving organization where all the power, money, and recognition and everything goes up the hierarchy away from the thing, you're dealing with ducks who go, quack, quack, it's our policy. I just work here, quack, quack. I don't make the rules, quack, quack. Do you want to talk to my supervisor, you know? And you get all that duck behavior because they don't think they have any power. Where at Southwest Airlines, if you've got a customer problem and you talk to them, you're dealing with an eagle. You're dealing with somebody who says, we'll take care of it. I mean, the story that just has gone all around this last week is that a pilot held a plane for 12 minutes because he heard that this couple was racing to try to be at the bedside of their grandson who had got hurt in an accident, and they were going to pull the plugs that day, and they just wanted to be with him. And he so told the customers, he said, I hope you don't mind because I would do the same thing for you, but we want these people to get to their grandson's bedside, you know. And you know, that's eagle behavior. That's not quack, 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 I'm sorry, you know, the plane leaves at such and such and that kind of thing. So I just love those kind of metaphors. And you know the difference between an organization when you're dealing with an eagle rather than a duck. At Nordstrom's, the great retail, they teach all their people to say, no problem. You know, we'll take care of it. That's eagle training.
Beautiful. I think all of us have had that experience where we've run into duck type of businesses. That is not a fun, and it is not an inspiring environment at all. So I'm just curious, are there other hero type of brands or companies out there that you see, that you work with, that you would say, here's an eagle kind of company?
Well, just take, for example, in your own location, Chick-fil-A. I don't think they beat everybody in the quick service restaurant business. And they train everybody in an acronym called SERVE. And I wrote a book with Mark Miller, who has been heading up their training, called What Do Great Leaders Think and Do? And they serve, you know. And I think that that's their whole philosophy. I mentioned Nordstrom's. Also in Georgia, Synovus, you know, in the financial service business out of Columbus, Georgia, you know, got chosen the number one company to work for by, you know, the Fortune magazine. So often they said stop applying, and they made an all-star list for them. But the two key founders, you know, teach and give scholarships and servant leadership and all. Ritz-Carlton, another Georgia-based company, you know, says we are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. So it's interesting that Georgia would be the home of three of the classic examples of this. Wegmans also in the grocery business, chosen the number one company to work for, all led by servant leaders.
Ken, this is Tamara O'Neill, and I have to share with you that I did have an experience like that last night, actually, when I had to call AT&T and ask for some help with my cable. And I spoke with an outsourced customer service person who was helping me with my cable, and actually it was all about setting up a wireless DVD. It was 3D, Blu-ray, really cool, but I needed some extra help. And lo and behold, not only did this person who helped me on customer service make sure that I was set up correctly online with AT&T, but he insisted that he waited until I got that Blu-ray player on and make it work. And I was so impressed how he wanted to serve me and see the results of our efforts and make sure that everything happened the way it was supposed to.
I think that's just great. And, you know, you see very often eagles in potential duck ponds, you know. I mean, because, you know, I've had some interactions with AT on the phone where, you know, you're trying to get some information and they say, I'm sorry, we can only give you two numbers, you know. I say, yeah, but why do I have to call back? Aren't you here? You know, and then quack, 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 quack. And there, it really is great to see people who just in their heart will do it regardless of the environment.
You mentioned, Ken, in your book, and it sounds like this was in collaboration with someone else, about an ongoing potential list of what you refer to as a Fortunate 500 listing. What a great tag.
Yes, well, you know, the problem with Fortune 500, it's all size and volume, and that's a concept I got from John Nesbitt when he wrote Megatrends years ago, and he actually was a graduate assistant in the government department when I was an undergrad at Cornell. And a Fortune 500 company would not just look at profit and size and volume, it would look at what's the relationship you have with your customers, what's the relationship you have with your people, and what's the relationship you have with your performance. Because I think the profit is the applause you get for taking care of your customers and creating a motivating environment for your people. At Southwest, they're very clear that their number one customer is their people. And if they take care of their people and treat them with golden rule behavior, then they will reach out to their customers, the people who fly their airlines. And if they do that and take care of them, the customers will be happy and want to return. And then that'll take care of the third most important customer, which is a stockholder. So they go people, customers, stockholder in that order. And I think that's a very powerful thing. And the companies I mentioned really do that too.
Do you find that is becoming more of a trend, or do you see that business is still very resistant to that kind of thinking?
I think it really depends on the top managers, to be honest with you. You know, if they think that their self-worth is a function of their performance plus the opinion of others, and they think the most important opinion is what does Wall Street and the stock people do, then they don't have that priority because they don't get that long run makes a good short run. And so I think it's happening more and more. Unfortunately, the press doesn't publicize it. You know, I remember asking Norman Vincent Peale, I got a chance to write a book with him when he was 86 years old, and I said, why doesn't the press publish more good news? He said, I'm so glad they don't. He said if good news was news, there wouldn't be much of it going on. He said the only reason bad news, is not much happening there. And I believe that in business. I think there's so much good news in business and in organizations and all that's not really publicized, and in government and all that. All we do is focus on the problems.
What a great, great way to say it. And you mentioned in the book how it is so important for these Fortune 500 kinds of companies and companies in general to have a triple bottom line. And can you explain a little bit about what that means?
Yes, I was really talking about that just recently. What it really is, you want to be the employer of choice. You want your people to really love to work for you. In fact, like we give a $400 bonus to anybody in our company who recommends a friend or a relative for a job opening that we hire, because we want them to go out and get their best friends and relatives and all. And if they're gung-ho for us, that's really important. So we want to be the employer of choice. Then, of course, you want to be the provider of choice. You want raving fan customers, and they're customers that want to brag about you. And then, of course, you want to be the investment of choice for your owners, your stockholders, and all that. And as I said, with the Southwest, it's first employer of choice, then provider of choice, and then the investment of choice. But it's really interesting that triple bottom line ends up with a win-win-win when you follow it.
Great insight. I'd like to shift gears for just a moment and talk about Ken Blanchard personally for just a sec. Because you speak about that everybody has positive influences in their life, and that's easy for all of us to identify and to be grateful for. I certainly am. But you also bring something about that I think is really unique. And that is recognizing the negative influencers and how they have had a positive impact in your life. Can you share with us a little bit about how that principle applied to you?
Well, it's interesting. You know, somebody always said, you know, your kids might not talk about it as they're growing up, but they're observing you like crazy, you know. And people are observing you, and I think you ought to be observing and looking for positive examples, but what can you learn from negative examples? Because I'll never forget when I was, God, I think it was, you know, end of elementary school, beginning of junior high school, I was a basketball player, and we had one of the fathers coaching us, and he was a phys ed teacher and all, and he was just a screamer. He screamed at the referees, he screamed at us, you know, and all. I mean, and he acted like the only most important thing was winning. And all, and as a result, we didn't play all that well because we were scared about making a mistake, you know. And so, that was a really powerful thing. I'll never forget. My father retired as an admiral in the Navy, and I won the president of the seventh grade. And this was a powerful transition from this coach. And I came home, and I was all pumped up. I'm the president of the seventh grade. My father said to me, "Congratulations, Ken, but now that you're president, don't use your position." He said, "Great leaders are great not because they have power, but because people respect and trust them." And I went, whoa, what a interesting contrast to this coach that I had just dealt with.
Wow.
And so I think it's interesting to learn. I think my belief, when you stop learning, you might as well lie down and let them throw the dirt over you, you know, because life is a constant learning, and so I'm always observing and watching and trying to learn more. I mean, I've learned a lot from your friend Lori Beth Jones in terms of her heart and the observations that she's made, and, you know, that's why I love to co-author with people and write with people, because I can learn.
So that's a really good message that I just heard, and the fact that one learns from the good things that happen in our lives, but also to appreciate the things that may not have gone so well as a learning opportunity.
Yeah, I think the key thing on that, though, is when things don't go as well, don't put the focus on yourself, you know, and say, "You idiot, how could you be so stupid?" Sort of say, isn't that interesting? I wonder what I can learn from that, because, you know, God didn't make any junk, and we're all beautiful. And that doesn't mean that we don't have, faults and things that we can learn from. But, you know, I always think that the people is that, to me, feedback is the breakfast of champions. And so if you got something to tell me, I really want to hear it. Self-serving leaders, if you give them feedback, they kill the messenger, see, because they think you don't want them to lead, and they think they own their position, where I love people with servant leaders, and that's what I've been trying to be over the years, is I realize that I don't own anything. It's all on loan. And so the big question is how do I deal with that loan? So when people give me feedback, I always say, thank you. You know, God, that's really helpful. Is there anybody else I should talk to? Because that's another way that I can really learn.
Thank you for that model and that example. Can you speak in the book, Lead with Love, about 1 Corinthians 13. In fact, I was really taken back by how much space that you allotted to unpacking that chapter in a business context. Can you give us a little bit of a background about why that is so important to you?
Well, you know, I really feel that, you know, as a leader, love is the answer. What's the question? You know, and one of the things that's really made me relax in life is to realize I'm not here to judge, I'm here to love. And I think there's too many faith-based people and other people with all kinds of beliefs that want to sit around and judge and evaluate people. And so many people, you know, at weddings, they'll read the 1 Corinthians 13, and everybody goes oohs and ahs and all, but they don't think about it. But what it really says is that love is a very powerful thing, but there's a number of aspects of it. And so you might say, well, gee, I'm a loving person, you know, and say, well, are you patient? You know, are you kind? You know, are you, you know, selfless? Or, you know, are you argumentative? You know, do you put people down, you know, and criticize? And, you know, so that's why I spent time for people to kind of look at that and unpack it to say, gee, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm not a 10 on all of those. And this will give me some ways to think about how I can get better, because I think if we get better in our walk through life to realize that we're here to love, not to judge. And I think it was also clear in our book, though, that part of loving sometimes is tough love, see? And that doesn't mean that you're, you know, putting people down and all, but you're also telling them the truth about what you perceive happening and how you think that could be hindering them or what you're trying to accomplish. And so, but you do it in a loving way, not sort of, you idiot, how could you be so stupid, but I really care about you and I want to help, and here's what I'm observing. And so so love is a multi-dimensional thing, and one that it's a constant journey for us all to do. It's just interesting, as a side note, I did a wedding recently, you know, in California you can do anything, and I was pastor for the day. But in talking to this young couple and the daughter, the gal I knew before she was born, my wife and I had been in India about a year and a half before, and we had this wonderful 23, 24-year-old guy that guided us around. And he told us his parents were back home arranging his marriage. And still about 60-70% of the marriages in India are arranged. And I said, you've toured around to a lot of Americans. What do you think is the difference between American marriage and an Indian arranged marriage? He said, I think one of the differences, it seems to me, is in Indian arranged marriage, the assumption is that over time, you will fall in love with the person you married. He said, you Americans seem to fall in love before you get married, and then you fall out of love. And I found a wonderful quote, and I held the kids' hands after they exchanged their rings, and I said, my hope, my dream, my prayer for you is that years from now you're going to look back at this important day and realize it was the day that you loved each other the least. Happiness is marrying the person you love, but joy is falling in love with the person you married. And I think that's this whole concept of love is just so powerful in all of our relationships.
That is an inspiring story. Incredible.
Indeed.
Ken, my understanding is that you're coming to Atlanta.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. And you said that you even had a table at that prayer breakfast I'm going to be doing.
Yes. So I would love clearly the opportunity to see you face to face and shake your hand. And
well, that would be great. And please do come up. I'd really, really cherish that.
And is there another event, though, that you would like to call out and provide any kind of information to our listeners?
Yes, on the 31st of January, I'm doing a session with a wonderful young man by the name of Justin Fatica, who has a youth ministry, and he calls it Hard as Nails, you know. And it's an interesting title, but he's really trying to get these people to realize that they are absolutely loved, and they're beautiful people, and that they can learn in life and stop putting themselves down, because he thinks one of the problems, you know, with kids is they start to get down on themselves and they get down on other people, and that makes them violent and all those kinds of things. And we're doing it from 7 to 9 o'clock at the Hebron Christian Academy, in Dacula, Georgia. It's not very far from Atlanta.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a wonderful event, and just come on down if you want to hear an inspiring young man, and the subject is basically, you know, love is the answer. What's the question?
Got it.
I think it'll be inspiration. Bring your kids. And all, and I think we'll really have a great evening together.
What a fantastic event! Is there a website that address that we could promote?
Oh, gee, I don't.
Well, we'll
don't
look
have
it up,
it,
and
I,
we'll put it on our website. We'll do a little due diligence on our part.
Be great. I'm still learning technology.
Aren't we all? Well, Ken Blanchard, I cannot tell you what a joy it has been spending this time with you. My life is richer because of that, and I just hope and I pray that you would continue to do what you do and make an impact into the world, and as I believe that truly because of your work, the world is a better place.
Well, thank you so much, and it's great to be with both of you, and you take care and keep on inspiring people, because I think that we constantly need to be reminded of that we're born in the image of God, and we got great potential to make a difference, and we just need to bring out that potential in ourselves and other people around us.
Well, thank you for that encouragement.
Thank you, Ken.
And have a great day, and you keep inspiring. Bye-bye. You have been listening today to Ken Blanchard on Inspiration at Work. And we wish you the very best for the day. And as we close out the day, just remember to keep inspiring.
You have been listening to Inspiration at Work on the GII Network with your host, Terry Barber. Find us on the web at www.inspirationboulevard.com and follow us on Twitter at Inspiration Boulevard.